Right, we're now going to talk about the effects of the COVID-19 flu. Quoting this from the CDC website, people with COVID-19 have had a wide range of symptoms reported, ranging from mild symptoms to severe illness. Symptoms may appear 2 to 14 days after exposure to the virus. People with the symptoms may have COVID-19. Fever or chills, cough, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, fatigue, muscle or body aches, headache, new loss of taste or smell, sore throat, congestion or runny nose, nausea or vomiting, and diarrhea. Now, as you notice, a lot of these is like the flu. It's mimicking the flu, really. The symptoms mimic the flu. All right, now we're going to talk about the difference between the COVID-19 virus and the regular flu. The one difference actually is that the flu is more deadly to most people, and COVID-19 is only really deadly to people with pre-existing conditions. And it's not even really deadly to them, as I mentioned before, because there's treatments for them. But we're going to show you, like with the common flu, people can die from all ages, especially young children and infants. If they get it, they can die from the flu. And of all ages, young people, middle-aged adults, and old people. So the flu hits like all ranges of people and can kill them. As you're going to find out here with COVID-19, it's really only dangerous to people with pre-existing conditions and people over 80 years old. We're going to show you a chart now of people who have COVID and the death rate for the people in different age groups. We're going to go to the chart right now. And this is from the Imperial College in London. And it's a chart that was from March 16, 2020. And you look at the age group from 0 to 19, which is your infants up to 9 years old, nobody dies, has died from it. From 10 to 19, nobody. From 20 to 29, nobody. From 30 to 39, very small. I don't even know what the percent. It's almost like close to zero there. And 40 to 49, a little bit more. 50 to 59, maybe twice that, but still reaching maybe only about 1 or 2% if you're looking at the chart here in percentages. And then you really, when you go up to like the 80 plus group, which is the most group that where people are dying from COVID, you're seeing that out of them even, only 10% of them die. Only 10%. And out of those 10% that are dying, they have treatments for them. And they're not treating them. They can treat them. So that's how, it's not the thing they're trying to tell you it is. It's this big monster plague, like when you looked at the Black Plague, when it hit Europe and killed half the population, three quarters of the population are laying out in the streets and they're dead and they're dying. That's they're trying to pretend. They're making this, they're exaggerating these things that we're talking about. Now, if you were to look at a flu chart, you'd see that it hits all ages. And they can die from all ages. So you're seeing how they're what's happening with this COVID-19, and it's actually really less deadly than the flu. And so now but they're exaggerating, which brings us to the next point. The conspirators make it more dangerous and more deadly than it is to oppress and subjugate the masses. And how do they do this? They do this by fear-mongering. They fear-monger by exaggeration, lying, false diagnoses, and by murder. To make this thing seem that it's this really big, gigantic plague, like the Black Plague was in Europe or some really deadly thing. And so this is how they do it. We're going to go into that now. Just to give you an example of how fear-mongering works, we'll talk about the Jaws movie. I think everybody remembers when Jaws came out. I think it was in 1970 or 80, I forget. But when Jaws came out, and we all were watching it, after that movie, nobody wanted to go to the ocean. Nobody wanted to go swimming anymore. I mean, whoever saw that movie, and that movie went throughout the world, you know. But when it started, I said, nobody. I lived in New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey, and we used to go down to the Jersey Shore. And it was, they have nice shores down there, you know. And when I came out, nobody wants to go to the shore. We're all afraid, right, to go to the shore. Now, what's happening there, right? When that movie Jaws came out, first of all, no more or less people are dying from shark attacks than before Jaws came out. So before Jaws came out, the same amount of people are dying from shark attacks as after Jaws came out. So it wasn't like there's this plague of sharks that just increased when the Jaws movie came out. I'm just showing you the psychology, how it works upon people's minds. It's the same amount, and we weren't worried about it before Jaws came out. We were swimming. And so what's the proper action when you watch that movie too? The proper thing is when you have a Jaws outbreak, a shark coming in and killing people at a particular beach, you do close that beach down. I'm not saying go swimming in that beach. Close that beach down and make sure you have people go out there and kill the shark and make sure that people don't go swim until it's safe. So you, but you only closed down that one beach. You don't close down every beach in the United States of America because a shark killed somebody on the Jersey Shore. I can think of a lot of people that loved sharks to kill on the Jersey Shore. The corrupt politicians when they're swimming, the nominal Catholic apostate clerics. I don't mind them being killed. But you would only close down that beach until you clean up the... get rid of the shark, and then open it up again. Does it make sense that you have a shark attack on one beach in New Jersey and everybody in the United States has to stop swimming and going to the ocean? And everybody in Europe has to stop going and swimming in the ocean? Because one shark killed somebody on one beach? You see, but this was the psychology of what's happening with this COVID thing, what they're trying to do with the COVID thing. And let's talk about even a major plague. When you had a really big plague, which they're trying to make this one out to be, but it ain't going to make it. I'm sorry, pal. You know, as I said before, even the people I knew who had it, they never had to go to the doctor. They just got better on their own. And I walk down the streets. I don't see people laying down dead on the streets, people falling down dead and people dead in their house. I don't see it, okay? But even if you had a plague that was like that, a really serious plague like the Black Plague, and people were dying, like half the population's being wiped out, they still didn't close down the economies. They didn't tell everybody, stop going to work, stop producing food, stop what you're doing, because they would have paralyzed their whole country. And it's really suicide. When you close down a nation's businesses and you close down the whole nation, you're destroying the nation. You're actually just weakening the nation and destroying it. Eventually, if that stays on for too long, you're destroying. So you're either going to get killed by the plague or because of your shutdowns. But here's my point: when they had really bad plagues, what did they do? They would isolate the areas that were where the people were infected, and they would quarantine them. They would put them in a quarantine area, and anybody who got the plague will go into that area. But outside of that area, life goes on as normal. Life goes on as normal, and they will quarantine. I'm going to show you some clips from two particular movies that shows you about these how they used to quarantine people. This one's from Joan of Arc, and we'll go to the clip.
Victor, the gatekeeper. He grew up here. He lived in Littoral.
What?
He has the plague.
Keep this on. You mustn't take it off. And touch nothing. You hear me? Nothing. In this cloak, burn it as you're leaving. For God's sakes, child, be careful. Don't worry, Mother Brother. I'll be all right. Brings you peace. Thank you, Victor. Thank you.
Yes, this will protect you.
And they'll show you from the movie Victoria on how they handled plagues in the time of Queen Victoria when she was in England.
Amos, I ordered it with the parish council on account of the fever.
My cousin and her baby live down there. They need my help.
If I let you in, miss, I can't let you out. So, you should decide how urgent your business is.
Now, Now, one of the things I try to use to enforce their lockdown on the whole, all the businesses and everybody's got to stay home in these major lockdowns, is they try to make you feel guilty if you go out or you're not wearing your mask or you're not following the restrictions. They try to tell you, well, you know, if you go out and you open up your business and you or you don't wear your mask and you go out there, you're actually killing people. You're endangering the lives of others. Now, you're endangering your own life, fine. But it's not just your own life. You could be endangering other people by giving them the infection, the plague, which scares people. And they actually call them like murderers. You're like murdering people. Now, I'm going to show you why that's against common sense and logic. Because if that's really true, what you're saying there, because then everybody should stay home perpetually, because every time you wake up in the morning, you can die from anything. You can go out and get into a car accident. Your car can hit somebody and you could kill somebody with your car. How many car accidents do they have a year, right? People die in car accidents, folks. Yes, they do, and it always happens every year. So wait a second. Should we then stop driving cars? Does that mean every time I get up in the morning and get in my car and turn that key and pull out of the driveway, I'm murdering people because I'm endangering my own life, or I could kill somebody else because my car can hit someone else? This is the mentality they're trying to make you feel like, but they never relate it to other things. You can go out and you can get bit by a snake. There's one of the scriptures that talks about the man who's afraid of everything. He doesn't want to go outside because a snake might bite him. There might be a lion around the corner. There might be a thief around who's going to stab me with a knife. I might get into a car accident if I go over here. This might happen to me, and I'll fall off the ledge and break my hip and then hit my head and get a concussion. I'm not going to go out of the house. I'm not going to go out. I'm going to stay in the house. Oh, and I better watch out in the house too, because if I get up on the chair, I may fall off it and die. I mean, this is stupid reasoning. It's irrational, and the people, but when they say this to people and they lay it on you and they make you feel good, you know, all the people that are falling to this are the lefties, the extreme lefty liberals. The Republicans, most more or less, are more sensible with this stuff. The conservative minded people, they're not going for this crap. They're going, wait, this don't make sense. This is crazy. Don't be telling me. Look, people die from the flu, correct? So should we close down the whole flu season for the flu? Close down the whole economy during flu season, right? Everybody, it's flu season. Stay home, because even infants can die from the flu. So stay home. See how they're trying to scare people by fear-mongering and lying about the people? And even like I said before, if you really did have a big plague, you would quarantine these people, and outside of the quarantine area, you go about your life as normal. And basically what they're saying too is, folks, people die in this world, you know what I mean? Our Lord said, is given to men once to die, and after that, to judgment. So, men know they're going to die. You got to die from something, right? I mean, with that mentality, maybe we shouldn't even play sports anymore, because people can die playing sports. I mean, you shouldn't even leave your house. So, and they keep repeating that every day. And they show you that. And here's what they love to do then. Every day they're quoting to you people who died from COVID-19. And like you said before, they shouldn't even be dying from it. But they quote these, look how many people die from COVID today. Look how many people die. And then they'll show like one or two cases every night. You'll see somebody and the family member who died from COVID, which, as I said before, they don't have to die from COVID. They could have been treated, or they died from something else and it wasn't even COVID, or they murdered them. But nevertheless, they put it on the news and they go, look at this family member that died from COVID, and you see the family crying. He was my father. He was 50 years old. He cared for our family, and now he's dead. And they show up at the funeral, and they show the family crying, and you see like maybe a couple of these cases every night, right? Well, you can do that with anything. You can do that with the flu. If you put on the news people who die from the flu, people will be scared if they're wimps. They would be scared to go out. They say, well, look, another person died from the flu. Oh, what are we going to do? And you show the person who's dead, the baby that died from the flu. Show the baby. That was my only baby. He died from the flu. It's just they play upon you. This is what the Black Lives Matter radical bastards do this, right? When they're blaming the cops. They're saying cops are shooting all these cops are killing all these blacks all over the place. Like thousands of blacks are being murdered by cops. And we went over this before on my thing, this deception in the major media and Black Lives Matter. You got to look at that, what they did about that. First of all, those cops weren't guilty anyway. Those black radicals deserved it, okay? And it was only like 10 cases. But what did they do? I went over it in the video. They repeat it years later. And you think like this 10 is now 20, it's now 40, It's now 80, and then you're thinking like this is what they're doing with the COVID thing, okay? So don't do the violin thing. Show a couple of dead people die from it. It doesn't bother me. I don't care. You want to show people every night that die from car accidents every night? Show them mangled up and dead, and tell the people another person died from a car accident over here, and another one from over here. Let that be a lesson to all you people that drive cars, you murderers. Now stay home and stop driving your cars. Well, how am I going to go to work? You got to ride a horse. Oh, well, wait a second. People die on horses, too. Oh. Then how am I going to get to work? You guys got to walk to work. Yeah, but I can hit a stone. A snake could hit me on the way walk because I'm not in the car. Outside of a car, like in here in this desert, we have rattlesnakes. See, so if I walk around a lot, a rattlesnake may come in a bush and bite and kill me. So that's no good neither. So how do I go to work? You don't go to work. You stay home and everybody dies because nobody works. This is stupid. You understand what I'm saying? You people that are in bed with the rational fear are idiots. And you deserve what you get. You're idiots. And I just want, I mean, this is what the, I'm doing this for goodwill people and maybe even some of you idiots that stop, I pray for you to stop being an idiot. Stop being scared. We see it around here in town. It's crazy. Just, you know, I'm not saying we don't obey the law, because I don't want to be, you know, if they say wear a mask or you can't go into Walmart to buy your food, I'll put the mask on. But as soon as I come out, I take it off. You know? Because it's not worth me going to jail to disobey a stupid law because I'm not wearing a mask. But it's stupid. I know it's worthless. But when you're like, they tell you, if you're like, I exercise every day and I walk around town and I run and do my rosary walk, I don't wear my mask and you don't have to wear the mask. But you got people wearing a mask even when they don't have to wear the mask. And they're in a car all alone driving and they got the mask on. And what is it with this guy? You know? And when they look at you, they think you're like a murderer or something. Like, oh, you don't got the mask on. But this thing about, we're getting back to the idea of how many, I'll just give you an example of how many people die per year of certain things. This is from the CDC 2019. Heart disease, 659,000 people. Cancer, 600,000 people. This is in America, though, but not global. Accidents, 173,000. Chronic lower respiratory disease, 156,000. Stroke, 150,000. Alzheimer's disease, 121,000. Diabetes, 87,000. Nephritis and nephronic syndrome, nephritis 51,000, pneumonia 50,000, and suicide 50,000. And so these are all the people that die from these things. So let's put them on every night TV, you know? And let's not forget another thing about, we're talking about lefty liberals, right? You filthy bastards, you baby murderers, you infanticide baby murderers who support abortion, right? Did you know that, like, last year in the whole world, there's 42.6 million babies murdered? And they never talk about that. Can you imagine if you showed on TV aborted babies coming out of the mother's womb? They rip them out and you see the baby going like this. They don't show you that on TV, folks. And that's murder. And that's happening on a massive scale. And that is a real plague. And that doesn't get shown on TV. And if they show that on TV every night, I guarantee you, a lot of people start thinking double about abortion, especially young kids that have been lied about by their parents or anybody else and their leaders, and they grow up and they look and they see it on TV and one day they go, this is murder. They don't show you that, do they? Look how many, they don't care about them. Oh, but watch out in the COVID-19. We got these few percentage of people that are dying from it. Let's close down the whole world. Few percentage that are dying from it. And even those that are dying from it didn't have to die from it. We're going to go into that in a minute here. Now we're going to, this is another very interesting quote that we're going to give you here. And you're going to realize this is also proves the fact that a lot of these people are dying from COVID-19 aren't really dying from COVID-19. They're dying from other complications and they happen to have COVID-19, but they didn't die from it. And there's other people that didn't even have it and they said that they died from it. But here's proof about COVID-19 is hardly killing anybody. If so minuscule, although they say it is happening. For instance, United States, I think they said up to this date, we have 565,000 people, something like that, that died from COVID in the United States, up from the beginning till now, which is like, we're talking about almost like a year or so, or 2 years, a year and a half, a couple, I forget what the time is. But if that's true, right, and you got let's say 300,000 or 400,000 people died from COVID a year in the United States last year, okay, then you would expect that the death rate in the United States would go up, because now these people are dying from COVID, right? I'm going to give you a chart up that shows you the people that died in the United States per year from 20, we're going to put the chart up right now, and it's from 2015 and from 2016, 2017, 2019, and how many people died so far? Up to November 16, okay, of 2020. November 6th. So they're only missing December, really, basically, on this chart. Now, by the way, listen to this little quote that's up here. It says, from Mark Twain, it says, it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled. So it's easy to fool them, but once they're fooled, it's going to be very hard to tell them that you've been fooled. And that's true. That's a true statement. But anyway, let's take a look at the stats. 2015, 2.7 million people died in the United States. 2016, 2.7 million people died in the United States. 2017, 2.8 million people died in the United States. 2018, 2.8 million people died in the United States. 2019, 2.9 million people died in the United States. 2020, when the COVID hit us, and they're telling us we already had about 400 to 500,000 people die in the United States, up to November 16th, 2020, 2.4 million people died. On the same line, and even less than the other years, or equal to the other years. So where is this addition? If people are dying from COVID, it should be added on to that, and we should have a number that's looking like around 3 million or something, 3.1 million. And you're not seeing it. It's not there. It's not there. Because these people are dying from COVID, they died with COVID, but they didn't die because of it. And other people that they said died of COVID never really even had COVID. We're going to show that now. We're going to get into that now. But that's like pure mathematics. Add it up. Where's the thing? Take a look at the Black Plague when it hit Europe of the world population. Take a look at how many people died then, folks. That's a real life plague. And wait till you get hit from the plagues God's going to send upon this earth in these final days. And also the plagues, other stuff Antichrist is going to do in the future. He's not done yet. This is just his first conspiracy plague on the COVID-19. He's planning for another one and another one, and they'll be more deadly. But we're going to throw plagues down on you too, by the power of God, and you're not going to be escaping that from no vaccine, from no therapeutics. You're going to die dead, done, and that's it. That's a real thing. This thing is a fake thing. Imagine what the people. It's in the scripture somewhere. Like these people on the left that are scared of their own shadows. When the real one hits, I think they're going to die from a heart attack. They're just going to drop dead in front of their TV. Bow down, dead. They're going to be so scared. At least they'd have... they're not even going to try to resist or anything. Or they're just going to completely die. Now, but we're talking about here... You're looking at the mathematics here. It doesn't add up what they're telling us. It doesn't add up. For example, look at this clip from PBS NewsHour. We're going to show you right now.
We mark more than 200,000 American lives lost and 6 months of the NewsHour honoring the victims of COVID-19 every Friday evening. Tonight, we honor five more. Here are their stories. Howard Croft had no tolerance for injustice. Raised by his grandparents in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Howard learned early on to fight for working people. He spent decades fighting for social justice and advocating for voting rights and D.C. statehood. His wife described Howard as entirely fierce, but said he let his gentle side show for her and the rest of their family. Howard was 78. Ana Maria de la Torre was an icon in her San Jose neighborhood, her friend said. For dozens of families, she cared for their children as a nanny and cleaned their homes. The Mexican native loved hosting huge parties and bringing people and cultures together. She was known for her phenomenal cooking. Ana was also a fighter. She survived lymphoma in 2012. Her beloved son and granddaughter were by her side when she passed at the age of 65. Growing up in Ford City, Pennsylvania, Timothy Russell enjoyed reading so much that his mom would have to ask the librarian to send him home for dinner. He went on to become an admired scholar, headmaster of Christian schools, and most recently a minister in Memphis, Tennessee. A friend said that Tim was a courageous pastor who loved fiercely. He enjoyed traveling the world with his wife. Tim was 62 years old. 47-year-old Raven Voice was a born caregiver. Raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as a member of the Creek Nation, Raven's daughter said her mom was always taking care of others. She tutored and mentored Native American students and worked for 14 years as a nurse for the elderly. Above all else, her family said she was dedicated to her mother, children, and grandchildren. Ray Doc Dougherty would sit on the front porch of the house he lived in for 49 years in Philadelphia and smile or chat with anyone who walked by. A letter carrier for the U.S. Postal Service for almost four decades, Doc was beloved by the community he served. Doc's wife of 50 years said her U.S. Army veteran husband was a simple man whose greatest joys were her, their three children, and 13 grandchildren. Doc was 70 years old.
We want to thank all the family members who shared these stories tonight. Our hearts go out to you and to everyone who's lost a loved one in this pandemic.
Get me a vomit bag. I want to vomit. This is disgusting. What about all the other people that died in this whole wide world? And you notice she only picked out one white guy. The rest were all minorities. Who cares about the white people when they die? They're just trying to make you think that it hits mostly minority groups anyway. But what about, you can do that about anybody who died on any day, on anything, from anything. Imagine that. Like if every night that's all you did is talked about all the people that died in the world. You know, this, and instead of going, getting on with your life, you know. It's all emotions. It's all emotions. He goes, my heart goes out a curse for me goes out to them. A curse for you for playing upon the sentiments of people to make them be fearful and to make them scared and to lie to them. This is all based upon, they're killing people with what they're doing here. They always do this with the sentiments. The Holocaust, they do this all the time, which never really happened. And they show you these people that supposedly died or had people that died and they're crying and they play the violin and all that. Actually, it's an insult to other people that died too, you know. Anybody that died from anything. I mean, you know what the heresy is that we have today that's going on? Is that, you know, as long as you're a human being and you die, you're good. The act of death means you're good. Just because you just died. He died. He's great. Of course, unless you're like a conservative person, you know, or not a Christian, a true Christian, like Catholics, you died. No. Anyway, this is what they do, you see. And they put this, and it goes on every night. Every night. The other thing they do to make you scared, and they make you think that there's all these, I think, like I told you before, I think up till just this week, they said 568,000 people died in the United States, which is like, even that's a very small percentage of our population, even that, but that's even a lie. That's even a lie, right? But it's not, they make it sound like it's like half the population's being wiped out, or one third of it. And I think we gave the percentage on that. That percentage is very small, something like 0.1% or something. I forget what the percentage on a population of that is. It's small. But to make you think that more people are really dying from it, here's another ploy that they put. They says there's so many people dying, the emergency rooms are crowded, and we have to bring in freezers, these freezer trucks. And we got to bring these freezer trucks in because we're stacking them in like sardines into these freezer trucks. Now, I'm going to show you a picture. So when you look into the news, they show you the freezer trucks, four or five of them lined up together. Three, four, or five of them. Here's these freezer trucks. And we're going to show you the pictures right now. And then when you look into the food, they're stupid too. They don't even know how to lie good, you know. They should have at least got like some mannequins and put them in body bags and stuffed the freezers. But what you're looking at here is like, here's, look at this one freezer. You only got like nine people in it laying on, they're not stacked. There's hardly anybody in it. It's like they don't even fill up the first level. There's like maybe 9 or 10 bodies in the freezers. It's not like they're stacked on top of one another to the gills, which is what they want you to believe, right? That's why they're showing you all that. Wow! If those freezers are packed to the gills with bodies, a lot of people are dying in this area. But they didn't even show you the right. They should have never showed these other pictures. They probably would have said, oh, that's the freezer that we're just working on right now. We're filling it up. It'll be filled up soon, but we don't want to show you those other freezers, you know, for the sake of the dying or the dead. Yeah, but you're showing us these dead people. Why don't you open up the other ones and show me how many people are in there? That's another big lie they pull with the freezer thing, right? And the crowded emergency rooms, they're not crowded. We have a picture of this guy driving around Elmhurst Hospital in New York, which is a highly populated area, where supposedly a lot of people, that massive COVID thing, people are dying and they're flooding the emergency room. He drove around it 4 or 5 days in a row, and all the emergency vehicles were parked in the front. They weren't doing anything. There was no people running in and out. There was no Russian people going in. All the emergency vehicles are parked out front. They're not going out, picking people up off the streets and bringing them in. He did that just to show you that this is a lie. You're looking at the same traffic that goes on an average day when there was no COVID. So there's nothing's going on there. And then there's nothing going on in the emergency rooms that equates to what you're trying to make you believe is a massive overcrowding. And to the point so much that the people even brought out the fact that you've got these nurses now and these medical people in there dancing in the emergency rooms, dancing in the halls of the hospitals. And they're saying, wait a second. And you're putting these videos out. You're saying, if this is such a crisis and you're overcrowded and people are dying all over the place in the hospital and you're dancing in the hospital, and when you watch these clips, like this one clip I'm going to show you from this guy, and you see these nurses dancing, I don't see no bodies laying in the hallways and stacked up all over the place. But even if they were stacked somewhere else, I don't think it's quite appropriate for you to be dancing. It's not appropriate to dance in a hospital anyway, if you ask me, period, you know. Sure. Unless you want to dance for, make someone happy inside. It's goofy. But if you got this major thing, that's like somebody saying, hey, we got the black plague going over here. Look at all these people that are dying in our community, family members and friends. And then your nurses are going, la-di-da-da-da-da-da-da, and they're dancing. You know? It's a mockery. It's like an insult to the people that are dying. We're going to go to a clip and show you about the dancing nurses.
The social media site TikTok in particular has recently been overrun by videos kind of like this one. And this one. Nice little conga line there. And then also there's a nice little Cupid shuffle that some of the other nurses were doing. Watch this. So this is a new trend where nurses and hospital staff are recording choreographed dance videos at the hospital and posting them online. And the media has been swooning over it, you know, saying it's inspirational and motivating and whatever. Now, I've gotten myself into a lot of trouble on Twitter because I tweeted a criticism of this. Now, call me crazy. A lot of people have over this and just in general. But I don't think hospital staff should be taking time out to choreograph dance routines at the hospital and post them online. You know, I would say that that's actually wildly, insanely inappropriate. And I would say that even in normal times. Okay, if I had a loved one that was at the hospital dying, and the nurse was off choreographing a dance routine on the clock at the hospital, I'd be upset about that. I would be. It seems reasonable to be upset about that. But especially they shouldn't be doing it now, because we have been told that we needed to shut down the whole economy and embrace a Great Depression because hospitals are being overwhelmed. That's what we were told. Right? And now, while millions of Americans wait in line at food banks because their jobs have been taken from them because of the overrun hospitals, while that's happening, we have hospital staff posting dance videos. Okay, I think a lot of people are going to look at that and say, why did I lose my job? You're telling me my business was destroyed and for this? They got nothing to do and they're recording dance videos. Okay, then why can't I get back to work then? Isn't that a good question, isn't it? Because there are two possibilities here when you see these videos. Either these are hospital staff that have nothing to do and so are just are dancing and recording it, okay? In which case, let's get back to work. Or these are happening at hospitals where there are people dying in a pandemic and you've got nurses dancing down the hallway. Literally dancing down the hallway and recording it and posting it online. I mean, either way, and I think it's kind of a mixture too. I mean, some of these videos are at the coronavirus hospitals and some are at hospitals where they got nothing better to do. Either way, in both cases, I would say wildly, insanely inappropriate. And I can't believe that so many people are defending it. I mean, I don't know. I keep saying I can't believe when people have stupid positions on things, but maybe I should start believing it because it's pretty common. Listen, the argument I've heard in response to my criticism, and not just my criticism, I mean, lots of people. I've gotten a lot of emails and messages from people who work at hospitals anonymously telling me and saying, hey, I don't want you to put this out there publicly with my name attached to it, but I totally agree with you. I work at a hospital and this is crazy. I mean, we would never do this at my hospital, right? So I'm certainly not the only one critical of it, but the argument I've heard is that, two things. One, I've been told that I shouldn't be against people having fun. You know, I'm coming out against joy and fun. No, it's to say that nurses shouldn't be recording choreographed dance routines and posting them online in a hospital during a pandemic and a shutdown that's cost 17 million people their jobs in 3 weeks. That is not the same thing as saying nobody should ever have fun. Okay, there's a lot of room in between nobody have fun and nurses, please don't record choreographed dance routines and post them online during a pandemic. I feel like there's a lot of room in between, right? And then the other thing is, well, I don't understand that people that are having these high stress jobs, there's a lot of gallows humor and you know, sometimes they joke around and have fun just as a way of lightening the environment. I get that, okay? But you don't need to post it online. And it doesn't need to be choreographed either, I would think. But even, why do you need to post it online? Okay, why does it need to go? It's like if I did have a loved one that was dying in the hospital. Now, I'm under no illusion that the nurses who are tending to my dying loved one, that they're in a state of mourning and, you know, are living the rest of their lives somber and going home and crying about it. I'm sure they're not. Okay, probably they're in dealing with my dying loved one, and then they go to the next room, and they could be smiling and joking around for all I know. That's fine. But obviously, yes, I understand they're doing that, but they're not going to walk into the room with me when I'm sitting there with my dying loved one and say, oh, I was just having a great laugh in the next room. Let me tell you this joke that I heard. No, that would be extremely inappropriate. Not because I'm saying they shouldn't be joking around, but keep that to yourself. Okay, have some decorum and some class. You keep it to yourself. You don't bring it into the room with the dying people. Clearly. But no, I'm a big Scrooge, of course. That's the main thing. Which I am a Scrooge, but I don't think that has anything to do with this.
Now, we're going to talk about how they lie about increasing the number of COVID deaths by false diagnoses. The first way they do that is some people who died did not have COVID, but only had the flu or similar illnesses, and they say they had COVID. All right? And so we're going to go to the clip on that.
If my husband were to die, who has COPD, his lungs have fibrosis, his lungs would look exactly like somebody with COVID-19, theoretically, but he has no evidence of infection. So if you're not testing and you don't have evidence of infection, and if he walked in there today, you know, they'd call it COVID-19. And we hear this from the doctors and nurses who are upset.
I've seen so many doctors online that have made their own webcam videos just perplexed by the protocol that the CDC had given them.
Well, last Friday, I received a 7-page document that sort of told me that if I had an 86-year-old patient that had pneumonia but was never tested for COVID-19, but sometime after she came down with pneumonia, we learned that she had been exposed to her son, who had no symptoms, but later on was identified with COVID-19, that it would be appropriate to diagnose on the death certificate COVID-19.
When I'm writing up my death report, I'm being pressured to add COVID. Why is that? Why are we being pressured to add COVID to maybe increase the numbers and make it look a little bit worse than it is? I think so.
Why would they want to skew the number of deaths due to COVID-19?
Well, fear is a great way to control people, and sometimes people's ability to think for themselves is paralyzed if they're frightened enough. And that's not where I want people to be. I want people to say, we're going to get through this. I'm going to use my head. I'm going to go to different sources. I'm going to listen to different sources, and I'm going to think for myself, because that's what America's about.
We're now going to go to a video clip from an excellent documentary titled Blue State Slaughter. And it's a nurse, Erin Marie Olszewski, and she gives excellent testimony. And I pray a lot for her conversion and everything. She's really much of goodwill, at least as far as concerned in her job as a nurse, and I told the brothers after watching this, if I was in a hospital, I'd like to have a nurse like her, because she really cares about people. You can see it with her. She really cares about her patients, whether they live or they die. And a big problem with the medical industry today is they don't care about people. They look at them like, treat them like bugs. And a lot of doctors, there's some good doctors out there still too, and nurses, who they'll tell you this. Because the old years ago, your average doctor, they actually really cared for people. Today, they look at people like bugs, just to make money off of them, and then kill them and throw them out the back door. That's the way the medical, a lot of medical doctors are like that today, and nurses. But she happens to be a good nurse. I'm just introducing a little bit about her, because we're going to go on throughout this. You're going to see a lot of clips from her. But she has a conscience, too. And she exposed a lot of stuff that's going on. And she was working in Elmhurst Hospital in New York, which is in a poor neighborhood in New York, which is, and actually in your poor neighborhoods where you have Medicaid and Medicare people, that's where they're murdering and mistreating most of these people. First of all, they have money. It's a big incentive to bring these people in under COVID-19. And richer people are more or less, they're afraid to go to abuse them because they can sue them and bring them to courts or whatever. But she's going to give you a testimony here from her experiences that there's a lot of people in there, too, that are being diagnosed with COVID-19 that don't have it. So we'll go to the clip.
But do you think we really do have many more cases, regardless of whether or not, you know, people went to the hospital?
I think they're forced cases. I mean, sure, people are coming in with COVID, whatever that may be. It is something, but not everyone. But they're admitting these people. That's the difference between New York hospitals or these, you know, Michigan, you know, the states that were, you know, hit the hardest, quote. They're admitting these patients as possible COVID, calling it COVID.
Or rule out COVID.
When they maybe just had a little congestion.
Now we're going to go to a clip from a Weather Channel, and this guy's talking about, hey, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, as COVID cases are going up, we hardly have any more flu cases anymore. They just disappeared. They're gone. Okay, folks, start thinking a little bit. What's going on here, you know? They didn't disappear. What happened? Like, since I've been alive, people get the flu every year. I mean, it's always been like a certain number, and it's always that way. Now, this year, it disappeared. Where did it go? What happened? The vaccine for the flu is finally working, which that's another bogus thing, the flu vaccine. It don't work. And then even, see, what they tell you is, you still may get the flu when you take the vaccine, you know, for the flu even. But you know, when you get the flu, it's going to be a lot less. How do they know it's going to be a lot less? You can't judge that, you know? A lot of people get the flu to different degrees, not as bad as other people. It's bogus. But anyway, my point is, how did the flus all of a sudden disappear? So doesn't that try to tell you everybody that really actually had the flu is now being diagnosed with COVID-19 instead, a misdiagnosis? We're going to go to the clip.
Well, the coronavirus pandemic may be having a positive effect on this year's flu season. Flu activity is unusually low for this time of year, the CDC says. 27 cases were detected in testing in the third week of December. And during the same week last year, there were more than 6,000 cases. Now, so far this season, 720 flu cases have been reported, compared with more than 31,000 this time last year. Cases are down, even though a higher than normal number of tests have been performed this year. All 50 states report only a minimal level of flu-like illnesses.
Notice how he's trying to make the excuse that the reason the flu cases are down is because people are social distancing, they're all wearing masks, and they're abiding by the rules. Okay, fine. Then how come they got COVID? You can't have it both ways. If they're obeying the rules, and they're wearing the masks, and they're social distancing, and so they didn't get the flu, then they're not going to get COVID neither. So where are the COVID cases coming from? You can't have it both ways. You see how this guy's lying? And if the masks aren't working, and which it really doesn't work, and the salt doesn't matter, in this case, does not matter, then you're going to catch the flu anyway. Actually, you'll find out, too, when you wear a mask and social distance, you remove yourself and your natural immunity from flus and diseases. We'll get into that later on. But here's a lie you're catching this guy on, right? Oh, they're wearing their masks and their salt. See how it's a good benefit for the flu. Then how come we got all the COVID? Oh, they're still catching it, right? Now we're going to talk about some of those who did have COVID-19, but they didn't die from it. As they make the really important addendum here that it's not the same thing to die with COVID as to die from COVID. So it's like saying, like, you know, I died, I broke my arm a week before I died, you know, and he says, you know, he died from a broken arm, but I had a heart attack, right? But I had a broken arm, by the way, so I died from the broken arm. So that's what they're trying to do. So people, some of the people who really did have COVID-19, they didn't die from it. But they listed that as a COVID-19 death, that they died from it. We're going to go to the clips right now. The first one's from Plandemic Part 1.
If someone dies with COVID-19, we are counting that as a COVID-19 death.
You don't die with an infection. You die from an infection.
Now we're going to go to another clip.
81-year-old Fred Creasy was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer at the end of June. Doctors gave him 30 days. The Newport man died at the end of July. He was in hospice care at Avamere Rehabilitation Facility in Newport.
You better come down here because we give him, it's going to be today.
Daughter Rhonda said Fred had also tested positive for COVID around the same time of his cancer diagnosis. He was asymptomatic and tested at Avamere before a medical procedure.
But, I mean, he had no symptoms. He wasn't even quarantined.
To the family, their dad died from advanced cancer. In fact, Avamere considered Fred recovered from COVID. But a few days after his death, Lincoln County Public Health reported him as their 9th COVID death. They now have 10 deaths.
I mean, that's not what he died from. He died from colon cancer, not the COVID. And places are listing, you know, loved ones as COVID deaths, and they're labeling that, and it's just not true. And I think they're overinflating numbers, and, you know, I just feel sorry for all the people that are listed COVID death.
To Rhonda, Fred died with COVID, not from COVID, and there's a difference. But in Oregon, I learned the state counts both as a COVID death. The Oregon Health Authority considers COVID deaths to be, quote, deaths in which a patient hospitalized for any reason within 14 days of a positive COVID-19 test result dies in the hospital or within the 60 days following discharge, or deaths in which COVID-19 is listed as a primary or contributing cause of death on a death certificate. According to the OHA, they do this because COVID can have a major impact on all sorts of health problems and to track the spread of the disease. But I had questions. Remember, the state said any reason. So if a person died in a car accident from alcohol poisoning or a gunshot wound and had COVID, would that be considered a COVID death? Well, according to the OHA, the short answer, yes. Here's OHA spokesperson Jonathan Modi.
So based on that criteria, if someone were to test positive, mm-hmm. 10 days later, get into a motorcycle crash, they die, but they had COVID, that will be listed as a COVID-19 death.
Right, it would be. But again, you know, I have to go back to the point about how we use this data, which is to help us track how COVID-19 is spread in the community. So that's a, you know, that's a huge factor. And, you know, we are using Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidance in tracking and reporting deaths this way.
He changed the topic, though, Eisenhower.
Yeah.
That's a totally different thing. If you want to find out how many people have COVID and how it's, that's one thing. But to say he died from COVID, that's a whole other animal, you lying piece of crap. He's trying to cover his ass and make excuses for that stupid, ridiculous, insane, irrational law. Anybody in listening to this who has an ounce of common sense can see it. If you can't see it, turn the video off and don't listen to me anymore because I don't want to talk to you. This is insanity. And oh, you want to, okay, it's one thing. Okay, the guy had COVID, and so let's see who else might have it. Okay, to have it's one thing. To trace who might have got it from him is another thing. To how you, if you died from it, that's a whole other thing. So, why didn't you put that on the report, that he died from a car accident, but he also had COVID, so let's find out if anybody else caught him. That, you didn't do that. You put down he died from COVID, not from the car accident. All right? Lying people. I hate that. You know, our Lord said all men are liars. Liars. They know no shame the way they're lying today. I mean, doesn't this guy go home at night? And some of these people lie because they got it covered or boss or what the law is. I'm sure some of these people go home and tell, like, some people, may, like him, maybe go home and go, oh, what a jerk that was. I just hope I got out of that one, you know? How do I explain this one? You're going to get another example in a couple of seconds about another guy that does the same thing. We'll go back to the clip.
The Oregon Health Authority has no plans to change their system or separate deaths into two different categories. Rhonda hopes they reconsider.
I just think if somebody goes, you get hit, you're in a motorcycle accident, you died, you know, from injuries from a motorcycle accident, not COVID. And just like the 1,000 people that died that day in Florida, they're calling it all COVID deaths. So nobody died of a heart attack. Nobody died of natural causes. They just all died of COVID in one day.
And that's why the flu, nobody's dying from the flu anymore. They all attributed to COVID. We'll go back to the clip.
All right, I do want to point out, we interviewed the family of a 26-year-old man who was listed as a COVID death. We interviewed them yesterday, and his COVID test came back negative. So, Dan, there are other families, you know, across the state really questioning how their family members were listed or why they were listed as COVID deaths.
All right, we're going to go to another clip now.
The coroner in one of Colorado's mountain communities is not happy with the way the state is classifying some of the deaths up there. The state's COVID-19 website shows Grand County has 5 COVID-related deaths, but the county coroner, Brenda Bach, says 2 of those people actually died of gunshot wounds. But because they'd been tested positive for COVID-19 within the past 30 days, they are classified as deaths among those cases.
It's absurd that they would even put that on there. Would you want to go to a county that has really high death numbers? Would you want to go visit that county? Because they're contagious. You know, I might get it and I could die if all of a sudden one county has a high death count. We don't have and we don't need those numbers inflated.
State Health Department says the CDC requires them to report people who have died with COVID-19 in their systems because it's crucial for public health surveillance.
Again, for public health surveillance, all right? Well, just say they had COVID, but they didn't die from it. That's exactly. Two totally different things. You see how people lie. So you can see the purpose right here of these people, the conspirators. And a lot of people are just following orders. But, you know, if you have some goodwill, I would say, I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to put that on the death certificate. Fire me. I'll lose my degree. I'm not going to lie. But you see already how they're trying to exaggerate and give you all these people and saying that they died from COVID when they didn't die. Another way that they increase these COVID-19 deaths, that these people are dying by COVID-19, is that some people really, again, had COVID-19 and they were murdered in the hospital by drugs, intubation, and other means. Intubation is the ventilating when they put you on the vent. And I'm not blaming everybody in the hospital that actually is carrying out the orders that are doing these things by excessively drugging them and putting them on ventilators like nurses and maybe some of the doctors or a doctor, because they're taking orders. You're going to find out in these clips, they're taking orders from above. That's the orders they were given. And this, again, we're going to quote from this Erin Marie Olszewski again several times. And they keep telling her, you know, we have to do this. We have to do this. It's orders from above. And at one point, she goes, I want to know who this order from above is. I want to speak to this guy from above. I want to speak who gave the order. Let me go up there and find out who it is. But some of the nurses and some of the doctors know what they're doing, and they don't care. They're cold-hearted fish. A lot of them know, and they don't care. This particular one nurse, I tell you, and others, some of them do care. But we're going to show you how they murdered them. First, she talks about how they excessively drug these people when they put them on the ventilators, all right? And the type of drugging, it's not, they give them the kind of drugs you get when you're under an operation. And they keep them on these drugs. Now, anybody knows one of the most dangerous things about an operation is when you go to sleep, this drugs they give you to put you to sleep. And that's, you can die from those, very dangerous. Because they really, what they're doing is putting you near death, slowing up your heart rate and everything, close to death, but not so quite much so that you die. And that's why the doctors, the anesthesiologists, are very, very important. Mm-hmm. And they have to be there, and they have to monitor you. So now, if you put somebody on these massive types of drugs, all these, you'll see, you're going to hear in a minute, all the drugs they put them on, and you drug them up, and then you throw a vent down their throat, and you leave them on it, and they're like that, you already just destroyed their immune system. They have no way to fight back. And not only that, you're endangering their life by their drugs, their immune system goes down, their natural ability to fight this thing by their own energy is gone, they're laid out, and they're as good as dead, okay? And that's how they're murdering a lot of these people. And we'll go to the quotes, you'll see. One doctor again says that when we intubate people, we never extubate them, they all die. He said they almost all die, he said. 90%, 10% only come out of it, the rest of them die. So then why are you putting them on that tube? Just let them die. Why are you drugging them up and putting them on tubes? Just let them die. You're going to hear all of this as it goes on. But so what's going on is they're actually murdering these people by drugging them and by putting them on ventilators, and they're murdering them by other means, by other types of treatments. And of course, I said before, they're also murdering them by not giving them treatments that could have saved them. But we're talking about here about the drugging and the intubation. We're going to go to a clip now from Blue State Slaughter.
What killed him? Did the vent kill him?
Yeah. Oh, yes. They're so sedated. He had probably 8 or 9 drips. It's all sedation. It's all sedation and paralytics. So you are asleep. It is essentially like you're under, you know, you're in surgery, you know, and they put you under like that for a good month straight. There's no way you can recover from something like that. You're brain dead if you do.
So can you list some of the drugs that they're put on the drips?
Yeah, there's propofol, fentanyl, Nimbex, Versed. Gosh, hang on, I have a list. This is one of my patients was on this. Just one patient. So Nimbex, 100 milligrams, Presidex, 400 milligrams, fentanyl, 2,500 micrograms, heparin, 25,000 units, Versed, 50 milligrams, Levofed, 16,000, Neo, 50 milligrams, propofol, 10 milligrams, vasopressin, 100 units. This is one person, and all these drips are running at the same time into them.
So in the case of this 37-year-old, he comes in complaining of some respiratory distress. Did he have low blood oxygen?
Totally healthy guy, and he was sitting like that's the oxygen saturation, and like 88, 89.
So a little low.
I mean, yeah, but people do that. You and I probably do that. We're not monitoring our oxygen, you know, all day long.
But he felt shortness of breath, so he came in.
Yes.
And what was the next step? What would have happened next?
He went to a step down unit, among other.
What does that mean? Sorry.
It's just a unit that where people aren't quite on the vent yet. And I say on the vent yet because I should call it a step up unit to the vent.
But so what's the phrase you used? COVID rule out.
So that's how they admit everyone to the floor that doesn't have a positive COVID immediately.
Okay, so he's put in the step down unit, which is a euphemism for step up unit.
Yeah.
And what happens to him there? What's going on there?
Oxygen. I wasn't in this unit. My friend was.
So just normal oxygen, nasal?
No, they'll do like a high pressure.
So what does that mean exactly? What does it look like?
It's pretty much like a forced, it almost looks like a big thick nasal cannula, and you put it in your nose and it forces the pressure in. It can almost be like, you know, it's still causing your lungs to expand, right? But what they really need to be doing is like the non-rebreather mask, but they just skip it usually. They go right to the high pressure, so their lungs are already, you know.
So, and tell us what a non-rebreather mask is.
So that's just, there's a bag that is on the end of these masks. It's not forcing air down your lungs.
Okay.
It's more natural.
Okay.
You know, and you can put 100% oxygen. That's what people need.
Okay, so and that really is not the protocol. It's not the protocol to start people on that.
I mean, it should be, but it's not how they're doing it now.
I mean, in your prior experience dealing with people with low saturation, would that be what you would do?
Oh, yeah. That's what we were doing, you know, in my hometown.
And were you having better outcomes there?
Yeah, we didn't have this because we treated them properly, you know.
What would you say the kind of the case fatality rate was?
None. Zero. Yeah, by me, zero.
And what is the likelihood of coming out of the hospital you're in?
I'll tell you that the unit that I've been on, the only person that survived, ironically, is a guy who pulled his own tube out.
So he woke up enough to be able to do that?
Yeah. He wanted it out. He should have never been on in the first place. That's a whole other story.
So let's just keep going with this 37-year-old. So he's on the step-down unit, and he's being given semi-pressurized oxygen. It's not a rebreather mask. And then what happens to him?
They'll start treating them with medications, you know, that will...
And are they checking his saturation at this all the time? Does he have...
Yeah, he's on a continuous pulse ox, but, you know, the minute that he desats, like, they'll see, like, oh, no, he's at 87 now. Or, oh, look at this. Oh, he's going to need more help. And then they go tell them that they need more help, even if they don't. You know, it's ultimately what it comes down to is, like, people being just lazy and wanting to treat. They just want to treat. You know.
Is there any incentive to the... Okay, you're saying that the incentive for the residents is kind of experimental almost.
They're order followers.
And they're... Uh-huh.
You know, like, they want to please. That's what they're doing. They want to please. And, like, the protocol of that hospital is to treat.
To treat invasively according to... this protocol. And do we know where this protocol originates? I mean, because obviously the governor was talking about getting vents. Everyone was talking about getting vents. So this seems like this comes from very high up.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to tell somebody, the entire world, essentially, and especially the entire United States, when they're like, we need the vents. Like, if you tell people something enough, they're going to start believing it. So that's exactly what happened.
Tell me why Cuomo immediately thought 2 months ago that they'd need 30,000 meds. How do you just come up with a number?
Cuomo's an idiot, too.
Well, some of the Medicare's paying them that money for people.
29,000 of that.
So our 37-year-old, what happens to him next? So they say, okay, it looks like he's at 87, he needs more. And so is that the point at which they would intubate him?
Yeah, that's when he stepped up. So he stepped up to the ICU.
He steps up to
for
the ICU.
For more care, right? They start off with a little bit of like muscle relaxer and... you know, he's woozy. You have to remember there's no family with these patients. So they're alone and in hospital by themselves during a pandemic that they're terrified of already. That's likely what brought him in the first place. He's totally healthy otherwise. And then you have doctors. They think they're doctors, but they're resident. Technically, they're doctors with absolutely zero experience. I've had to teach residents several, like, nursing skills.
We'll get into the money incentive later on about that's another reason they put them on there. They get $13,000 for every Medicaid diagnosis, for Medicaid for every diagnosis and Medicare of COVID-19, and $39,000, and in some places $29,000 to put them on a vent. So there's a money, a big thing there also. Now we're going to go another clip on the same topic from Plandemic Part 1.
And you've killed them with the ventilator because you gave them the wrong treatment.
Now we're going to go back again to the Blue State Slaughter with the same, Erin Marie, and she's talking about, I think one of the doctors, I think these Indian doctor tells her something about they never extubate, they never take the tube out, except for maybe only like 10% of the people survive. So 90% of the people that get the tube, that's it, you die with the tube. And only 10% come up out of it. But she's now going to give an example of one guy who was a drug addict that came in there, and he's used to taking all these drugs, so it doesn't really affect him that much. So it actually saved his life in this case, because when they put him on the vent and they drugged him up with all these drugs, that usually makes you like you're out of it, he wasn't out of it, and he didn't like the vent, so he had enough consciousness and strength to pull the vent out, and she tells you, and then he pulled the vent out, and he ended up being saved. He's still alive. So you can go to, this is the clip now.
Same thing with bed 9. They didn't need to intubate him. He was progressing. I don't think that he
I don't know what happened after. We tried by that, and then they brought him here, and I thought, well, cross my fingers, we'll see.
And no one survives. He did. He was the only one that I got.
That's what happened with him.
But he pulled his tube out, and so he has a chance again.
Oh, he did?
He extubated himself.
Oh, he did? Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought he was extubated.
And how did he wake up?
Turns out that he did drugs.
So he was resistant.
He was
to fentanyl.
All of this stuff that we give normal people didn't cut it for him. So he ended up, yeah. I'm like, you just saved your own life, you know? That's crazy. Don't put that on. But I mean, it did. You know what's sad? So they pulled it out, and they're like, oh, you know, so-and-so's extubated. And I'm like, no way. They don't extubate anybody. I'm like, that's so weird. And here it turns out he extubated himself. And now, he's fine. He's home now. This was just a couple days ago. But he, you know what's sad is that he thinks we saved his life. You know what I mean? So he's like, you saved me. And I couldn't, you know, I don't have the heart to be like, no, man, you saved yourself. You have like 9 lives, because had he not pulled that out, he would definitely be dead, for sure. They don't extubate anyone.
Here's the problem. Not a single patient here, since this thing began, has been discharged or successfully extubated. So
now, going back again to the same documentary, this gets even worse. This one's even more diabolical. And this Erin Marie, again, she talks about how she had a patient that she was caring for. And so she shows you how much she cares. It was a guy with a tracheotomy, and he had COVID-19. And she said that he was getting better, and she was taking care of him, and she was talking to him. She helped him speak to his family. I think she said she was telling him jokes or something. She was making him uplifting his spirit. She said he was getting better, and he's doing quite well. You'll see the clip. And then they came and all of a sudden took her away from that the duties that she was doing and moved her over to the emergency room. And then as soon as she went over to the emergency room, 20 minutes later, there was this big code, whatever they had, and the guy died.
A few days after we recorded this interview, Erin began to feel that her time at Elmhurst was drawing to a close. Her vocal questioning of hospital procedure and her efforts to get the word out on social media were getting noticed. She made this recording on what ended up being her last day at the hospital.
I've been taking care of a patient for like a week right now, and this is my that I called him. And he's been doing great. He had a trach put in, and he's been doing great. He's been talking, like, or communicating with me. He's telling me, like, laughing at my jokes, and talked to his kids on FaceTime a couple days ago. And I told his kids that he was doing fine. And he was. And today I was giving him, and they came in and they told me that I need to leave the room and I have to give report to somebody else. They took me from that unit and they put me in the emergency room, and they don't need me there, but they put me there, and I'm not even there like 20 minutes. I'm not even there 20 minutes and I hear a code being called in my room that I was just left, and it's him. And he was fine. I don't understand. Nothing makes sense. Like, why would they take me out of his room and put me in the ED, and then not 20 minutes later he's dead? It doesn't make sense. Like, did they kill him? He was my one patient that was gonna live. He shouldn't have died. I don't know what they did to him. Something's not right.
Indeed, they did kill him. They're murderers. Some people are cold-hearted. I'm not saying everybody is, but a lot of people are, and they do it for many reasons. A lot of times they were making sure these people would die so they can put another patient in and fill the bed up and get the money. Money's a big motive, too. But yes, they did kill him, Erin. And if you want to know the reason and the purpose behind all of this craziness, listen to the rest of my lecture, and I'm going to tell you the purposes and the reasons why they're doing it. And you can know, as you already know, that the people who are doing this are cold-hearted bastards. They hate human beings except for themselves. And as I said before, the Talmud of Jews are on the top of this conspiracy. And they look upon all Gentiles as soulless beasts. And Freemasons too. If you're not a Freemason, you're not like even a human being. This is a monstrous ideology, a monstrous religion. It looks upon people as bugs and animals to be manipulated and murdered and unjustly murdered. All murder is unjust, but some killings are just. But this lecture is explaining the whole reason. You're going to get this through this lecture, not just from her, from a lot of people. They don't understand why it's happening. And that's why one of the main reasons I'm giving this lecture. As part of the Antichrist power to coming to power and world domination, and you're getting a little bit of a look at the people of the Antichrist. You want to be with these people? Continue on the way you are. The only hope you're going to have is to come to the true Catholic Church, which is right here in TRC's of what we're preaching, and to help you for all good what people will end up here. Anyway, this is a horrible thing that's going on in these hospitals. And you can see some people, and I'm sure she's not alone. There's other people, in the sense of having a conscience, but she was bold enough to put this video out, and this documentary, which is to her credit. A lot of people are afraid to do this. Now we're going to get into the thing that money or ideology is the incentive for these false diagnoses and intubation. And for those who are the conspirators, it's ideology. They're doing it to forward their satanic agenda. And for money, greed. Those are the people that are given false diagnoses of COVID, that don't have COVID, or people who had COVID but didn't die from it and say they did die from it, and intubation, in which they're murdering people. So it's money. And here's the money incentive. For everybody that comes in there and has Medicaid and Medicare, and you're diagnosed with COVID, you get $13,000 just for the diagnosis of COVID. If you put them on intubate them, you put them on a ventilator, that's $29,000 in some places and $39,000 in other places, just to put them on the vent. There you go. And I'll tell you, that's enough of an incentive alone to get people to follow those orders and to want to make money off of it. So you want to say, hey, the guy came in here with the flu, it's really not COVID, call it COVID. A guy came in with a different type of lung problem that's not COVID, call it COVID, $13,000. Hey, now we got to move him up onto the vent because then we're going to make another $29,000 to $39,000. And then when they put them on the vent, if they got all these guys on vents, they want to kill them so they can get them off the vent and move another guy onto the vent. Anyway, we're going to go to the clip from Plandemic 1 on this.
I've talked with doctors who have admitted that they are being incentivized to list patients that are sick or have died with COVID-19.
Yeah, $13,000 for Medicare, if you call it COVID-19.
Right now, Medicare has determined that if you have a COVID-19 admission to the hospital, you'll get paid $13,000. If that COVID-19 patient goes on a ventilator, you get $39,000, three times as much.
Now, also, just I forgot to mention, also, they also get paid for all the treatments they're given, for all the medications, and so they're getting paid for all of that stuff on top of it. This $39,000 is like a bonus for putting them on a vent, you know? And $13,000 a bonus for just the diagnosis. Now, we're going to go to another clip on the same topic, Blue State Slaughter.
And is there an understood financial incentive to diagnose COVID?
Yeah, of course. So, in the hospital that I'm in right now, it's all COVID at this point. Every single floor is COVID, and they made it that way, obviously, for a reason, in my opinion. But a person cannot come to the floor unless they have a COVID diagnosis.
Is the reason, did they not want to cross-contaminate? Would that be the legitimate reason why you would create an all COVID floor?
Here's why I will say no to that, is because they're admitting people for quote COVID rule out. So this guy was probably admitted COVID rule out, tested him. They saw that it came back negative. They probably already did something where they needed to now call him COVID, in the hopes that if they're putting him on a COVID floor and there's nurses going room to room to room, he will get it, and then they'll be back when he does pass that he did have COVID.
Now, I mean, that's quite a charge. I mean, what makes you think they really want them to get COVID? Because
money. I think it's at least $29,000 per patient. And then you have to think you're also charging supplies and more supplies and more supplies. That's just like a bonus money.
Tell me why Cuomo immediately thought 2 months ago that they'd need 30,000 meds. How do you just come up with a number?
Cuomo's an idiot too.
Well, $29,000
a vent. She said too, like, when these people don't have COVID and they put them on a vent, and they don't have COVID, but you're in a room with a COVID person. Now you're on the and you've got the drugs, your immune system, you get the COVID. She says you're dead because you're going to get it. You're in there with other COVID people. You really didn't have it. Now you're drugged up and on the vent. Your immune system is down. You got it. Now the COVID comes in. Now, another thing that the multimedia does and the conspirators do is every night you notice when they, on the TV, they tell you about how many people were infected by COVID when they go out and they do their testing, COVID testing. There's a whole big bunch of dishonesty going on with the COVID testing. First of all, some of the COVID tests that they come out is inaccurate. So they're telling people that, hey, guess what? You got COVID from the test says it, but they really don't have COVID. So you have inaccurate testing. And then you have the other thing where people are being tested repeatedly. So like this, you may be tested 1 week and then you go back 2 more weeks to see if you got it within the 2 weeks and they test you again. Then you go back another 2 weeks to see if you got it and they test you again. And they will count that as 3 persons, not 1 person who got 3 tests. So this increased the number of COVID testings and COVID infections. All right, they want to make it, and when they come on TV, notice, they keep telling you, look how many people are tested positive COVID today in New Mexico, in New York, in New Jersey. Look how many people got infected. And so what do I have to say about that? Who cares? The infection does nothing. Most people don't even die from it, even the people that they're killing, it's not a lot. No one should die from it. But so who cares? That's like coming on the news every night and saying, did you know how many people in New Mexico had the flu today? And every night you turn on your TV and they're telling you how many people had the flu? What do I care? I want to hear this every night. I know people get the flu. It's a give me. I don't need to hear it every night. You know? And it's always, they'll give you the deaths too, which is, even the people that they say are dying from it, is still a low percentage compared to the amount of people that are said to have it. But they keep putting infections out there and they try to scare you with it. Oh, X amount of people who had COVID were infected, were tested positive today. Oh, 50,000 people in New Mexico had the cold yesterday. Developed a cold and a sniffle. I mean, and they scare people with it. The mere fact that you have the infection, as we proved, as statistics prove, no one should die from it. But even the people that they're killing from it is a minimal compared to the amount of their population. We're going to give percentage numbers on it, for example. They'll come out in the United States, right? And they had, this is one thing we have where it says, according to the World Meter and the USA, there are 410 million COVID tests have been taken. Out of the number of tests, there have been 31 million people that were tested positive, and 568,000 people died. That's up to last week. These are the numbers from last week. So, percentage-wise, that is 7.5% of the people tested were positive, and tested positive means nothing. That's 7.5% of people tested positive, right? And only 0.138% of people died from it. The 568,000 really shouldn't die from it at all. Now, what they don't tell you, of course, that's obvious. If those die from it, then the rest of them either recovered, were sick, maybe some of them were sick, bad from it, some minimal, and some were what they call asymptomatic. And they had it, but they had no symptoms at all. So the whole rest of these people, nothing happened to them. They're okay. Okay? So what am I supposed to be afraid about? What are you scared of? Okay, so you're trying to scare me with the people that died. Okay? But that's even only 0.138% of the people that you tested, that tested positive. I mean, people are going to die from diseases. Sometimes you can die from a common cold. It can develop and you can die from a common cold. You can die from a flu. So what are you trying to scare me with all these testings? And what they generally do on the news too, when they tell you how many people tested positive from the COVID, they don't tell you how many people were tested. So you don't know the percentage of people that were positive out of how many they tested. I gave you the number here from the stats we got. But when you look at your local news in New Mexico or something, they'll say, oh, we had 3,000 people today tested positive. Yeah, out of how many tests did you give? So I can know the percentage. This Well, I'm giving you gave their percentage. So even if you gave their percentage, that's why they don't want to really tell you, because then you can do what I did, and you can figure out and say, well, that's still not a high percent. 7.5% of people are testing positive or tested. That's still not really a lot. But even out of that, only 0.138% of people die from it. So by then, and then the other way they do it too is they'll come out and actually give you a false positive where the test is inaccurate, where you really don't have it, and the test comes up and says you do have it. And we have one example here from this guy, Elon Musk, and this is from November 12, 2020, and here's something he put on his Facebook, I think it is.
Twitter.
This is Twitter. And he says, something extremely bogus is going on. Was tested for COVID 4 times today. 2 tests came back negative, 2 came back positive. Same machine, same test, same nurse, rapid antigen test from BD. Now, we're going to go to another clip on the same topic.
Now, we've been documenting the misreporting of COVID deaths, COVID test results, in Florida, in hospitals and labs there. Sadly, this turns out to be a kind of COVID misfire that isn't just confined to the Sunshine State, because not long ago, Virginia was also caught double counting the number of COVID positive residents. Now, in May, the state finally had to fess up. Joe Masenka, a spokesman for Virginia's COVID-19 Joint Information Command, said that repeat positive cases are counted as separate cases only if the tests occur on different days. If a Virginia resident tested Monday and Tuesday and both are positive, that's 2 positives. What? My next guest found out something interesting going on with the COVID stats in one county in Ohio, and he joins me now. Phil Kirpin has been on this better than almost anyone out there. He's president of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. Phil, this is ridiculous, counting the same person multiple times if they keep testing positive over a 2-week or month period. But what's going on with what you're looking at in Ohio?
Yeah, this was really interesting. This was actually a Twitter exchange I saw earlier today. Someone said, look, the numbers in Ohio are crazy. I have a parent who they won't let out of the hospital until we get a negative test, and they keep testing and testing and testing, and it's going in the case count every time, and it's been 10 or 15 times. And then another Twitter user named Kyle Lamb, who's been a really good researcher on this stuff, pulled up the Ohio case file and found the exact person she was talking about who was listed as 15 cases. Who was listed as someone of unknown gender in Mahoning County, age 80 plus, symptom onset May 25th, 15 cases. And it was added up into the state count as 15 cases.
Now, a friend of mine's mom was 92, who keeps testing positive. She has no symptoms. She told me the same thing, that every time she tests, it's counted as a separate case. But you've actually now documented it. All right, El Paso County in Texas is seeing an explosion of new cases, Phil. And this might be one reason why.
It seems there's still maybe some confusion on the number of people that are tested. There are individuals that are tested multiple times, especially if they get a positive test, from what I understand. You're not counting somebody twice, are you?
We do if they are tested more than once, but that number is very, very small.
Do you believe that number is very small, Phil? And what kind? I mean, they just say this like it's no big deal.
Well, you know, I think that that number might have been small a couple of months ago when we had a severe testing shortage. We now have a severe testing surplus. There are tests everywhere. We have this huge discontinuity in the data around June 10th, where you can just see the number of positives and the number of tests take off everywhere in the country. And, you know, states were told to do this. The panic purveyor said, you have to test everyone. Mass testing is the greatest. Then we start seeing these huge numbers of tests, including huge numbers of positives. And then it's, oh, my God, panic, shut everything down again based on those numbers. But a lot of the tests are repeat tests. A lot of the tests are, as you alluded to in the open, like Florida, lots of other states are reporting positives only and not negatives. A lot of employment-based testings, they come in, test everyone. The positives have to be reported to the state. The negatives, no one pops negative. They don't report it. So the data is a big mess, and it's really unfortunate because we have had a real rise in some places, much more modest than the big peak we saw a couple months ago. But it's very hard to differentiate that and understand how serious it actually is when you have this sea of bad data that we now have as a result of this hyper-testing.
Yeah, in 15 seconds, the hospitals now are required to directly report their data to HHS, not to CDC. How significant on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, we'll have to see how well HHS does, but I give it about at least a 7 or 8 because CDC's been atrocious. They've been so bad that most people are using a website from the Atlantic magazine to track national statistics instead of using the CDC website, which is pretty telling. And so I don't think they could be worse. Let me put it that way, Laura.
All right, Phil. Great seeing you.
So what's going on with that? So on top of it, you got these false positives coming back because they want to pump the numbers up. And then even if you do test positive from an accurate test, big deal. I don't want to hear about every day how many people have the flu, how many people got a cold, how many car accidents there are. You know, if you put that up every day on the news, you're going to try to depress people, scare them, fear-mongering. Show all the people that died every day on the news from cancer, from this, from that, and from that, and from this, and show their bodies, and show the dead bodies all over the place. People know what happens. We live and we die. You take a risk from living. You're all going to die. But you take a risk every day when you go out that something can happen to you. So this is all a scam. But what the thing is, when the news comes on, oh, we had 6,000 more positive cases in New Mexico. Shake in your boots and stay home and don't go out and close your businesses and don't go to church. But you can leave open the pot shops, the abortion clinics. They can stay open so you can murder babies. So they're trying to scare people. Now I'm going to show you an example of how these, a lot of these doctors and nurses really don't care about people. They're indifferent and they're very cold. They look at you like a piece of meat, like money to make, and there's no compassion for you as a human being. They treat you like an animal. We're going to just show you a clip on that from Blue State Slaughter. Basically, what's happening here is that when a patient is, they think he's ready to die or he's dying, if there's no DNR, DNR means do not resuscitate order, then they can't, what they call code. Code is when you jump on his chest, you hit him with an EpiPen, and you jump him and you try to resuscitate him. You try to bring him back to life. If you see he's dying or he died and his heart stopped, you want to bring him back to life. So when you get a DNR order, then the nurse is told and the doctor, don't do anything, just let him die because he's beyond help. Okay, now there's legitimate reasons for that, right? In this particular case, she's got a guy who's on the 37-year-old guy, and she says he's doing, and they took him off of his regular sustenance, his dripping and all that, and they're letting him die, basically. And she says, why are you taking him off all these things and letting him die? And she says, I don't have a DNR order on their computer for this guy. And she's talking to these doctors, right, and these nurses, or the doctors and nurses, and he's saying, well, he said, where did you get the DNR? She says, where did you get that DNR order from? It's not on the computer. And he goes, well, he's dying anyway, and he's going to die. So, you know, just let him be. You can't. She goes, well, if he's dying, I'm going to jump on him. I'm going to do a code on him. I'm going to jump on his chest, give him an EpiPen. She's going to try to save him. And he says, she says, I'm going to do that, because if I don't do it, I'm going to get blamed because there's no DNR order. And are you going to protect me for when I get in trouble for not trying to save him? And the whole question behind this is, why are you... Now, here's a doctor who didn't even get the order from above, wants to kill this patient because he's going along with the program, either because he's a conspirator or most likely because of the money. They're told, if you get these people out of here real quick, we can put another one in his place and get some more money. But here's a heartless doctor and a heartless nurse. And then she goes on to say that, and he says, well, he's dying anyway. He's not going to get better. And she goes, yeah, because you took him off the drips and you took him off of this. Of course he's dying. And so the whole argument was, I don't care, until I get a DNR on that computer, I'm going to try to save the guy. And then the one nurse, when the guy finally dies right in front of him because they don't get it in time, the one nurse that she was arguing with was smirking. She was laughing. Let's see the clip now.
So there was a resident, and I have this on tape. I taped it because it was just so disgusting to me. A 37-year-old, which is my age, was not a DNR. He's a full code. His family in depth discussed with the doctors that they want us to do everything they can to save him. He came in talking. He was very terrified. He was just like, you know, totally alert, knew what was going on, and they convinced him to be on a vent. Now he's dead. But the doctor said when I got into shift that if he codes that we are not to resuscitate or try to save him. And we flipped.
This is important. I just asked them if we can put a DNR order, and they said no. That's up to the attending.
Okay, so we're gonna code him.
That's what I said, and I said, no, we're not. I said, well, yes, we are. Yeah. We're obligated to. So then
you got to say something, though, like it's our license. Unfortunately, you guys got to put in an order. Just something.
That's what I said. Yeah. I said, I'm obligated.
Yeah.
What did she say?
So then she's like, the higher-up said. I said, I don't care what they said.
What higher-up? God? We don't have a God here making decisions.
I said, I don't care what they said.
So we're supposed to... He's not DNR, but we're treating it as DNR? Does his family know?
His family knows the situation. I think they called them and they told them. They were trying to do a school attending consent for All day he spent like in the 80s saturating. It was this one on the forehead thing. It was this one work. And it came back. When I changed it, I was like, oh shoot, it's 90.
Yeah.
So they started playing around with the
pulse. Oh shoot, it's 90.
He's still on perfect.
He changed the pulse ax
you put him on AC
from his head to his finger, and he's like, oh, it's 90.
I had to put a sign up last week, don't touch my...
He's fine.
So what was that?
So that was... We were just getting on shift because we're starting the night shift at 7. And that was the nurse from the day shift saying pretty much we shouldn't code him if he's going to code. And then I turned my glasses on.
Why are we being told not to code him, essentially? That's what he said. I mean, because I'm going to tell you right now, if he bottoms out, I'm jumping on his chest. Period. Point blank. It's going to happen.
Okay.
Because until that status is changed in the computer... That's what I'm obligated to do under my nursing license.
Right. I mean,
because you guys aren't going to back me up and protect me.
Well, Elmhurst does have a policy given, like a COVID policy, given the scarcity of dialysis and blood.
It can be a chem code. It can be whatever.
That it's not, there's not a... It's a difference. Normally, the standard is whatever the family says, like we just do. So if they would say code him for 5 years, like you just do that until they die. It's a little bit different now because of the new policy in place with Dr. put in place, which is that you don't need full family consent. Like you can just tell someone that it's medically futile and that we're not willing to just pour blood and resources into something that would be impossible to get back. But it's 37. I mean, it's brutal.
Well, so they tried.
Said, well, our higher-ups have agreed and our attendings agree that this is futile care at this point. He is not going to make it. I said, he doesn't have an EpiDrip going. He doesn't have anything to sustain going. And I said, and who decided this? And I said, can you put a comfort care order in then? No, we can't do that. Can you put a DNR order in? No, we can't do that. I said, so what's our plan?
Do we have modified?
She goes, well, he's dying. And I'm like, I understand that, but there needs to be an order indicating that either I'm doing compressions or I'm not doing compressions.
Well, I can say that we can all be in agreement that we will do it. I will definitely.
Because I'm going to jump on him.
Yeah.
So will I. I'll go right with you. I don't care. That's what we're here for. I'm not playing like these
stupid games.
Until
they change his status that he is a DNR, and they can do a true physician consent if they've talked to the family.
Yeah.
But until they change it, and I see it, he's a full code to me.
We know when someone is, we're close, we'll pull the code card up and be ready. You know, we're ready. I had the Epi ready. That's one of the first things we do. And she wouldn't let me give it. So this was that woman. And the entire time, and this was over his body, his alive body, and we're arguing, and she's laughing. She was smirking. And how this man died was the nurses arguing with the doctors over him as he was dying. And she's smirking the entire time. It was probably one of the worst experiences in my entire life. But all I can think about is that at least he knows that we were fighting for him when he died. You know? I'm a nurse. I'm an advocate for my patients. And to
the flip side of it, but I totally agree.
But no. Just wait. You were laughing and you thought it was funny. You were like smirking. You're being really rude to all of us. And I thought that was really.
I'm not being rude in that.
It was really. Yeah, you are. It was very disrespectful. Okay. And I don't think that you're going to be a very good doctor.
Okay. I understand. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you learned something from this.
Was this the dentist, or was this, or these are residents you're talking to?
This one was a fellow. She was a CCU fellow. She's a cardiac fellow.
This kind of stuff has been going on in hospitals for a long time. Doctors or nurses that don't care about their patients that are actually killing them by depriving them of things they need to live. We have one nurse that we have, one of the sisters here was a nurse, and she just tells a story where when she was a nurse, this one particular patient of hers was dying, and she wanted water, and she would give her water, and they said, don't give her water. They told her, hold back the water. And she goes, well, aren't you going to let her die a natural death? And she says, why are you not giving her water? And she said, well, you're not fit for this patient. We're going to have to give you, put you over to another. So they removed her from taking care of that patient. Now, that's murder, okay? That's murder, okay? It's the same thing as saying, she's dying anyway. Why don't you put a gun to her head and put a bullet in her head? Or why don't you shoot her with some drug and make her heart stop? It's the same thing. You give her what she needs until she dies naturally. When you start doing stuff like that, that's euthanasia. Now, that stuff's been going on for years in hospitals. I don't know about how long ago, but I know my father's a doctor, and things weren't so bad years ago, like in the 50s and 40s and 50s, there was a little bit more people that cared, and it's getting colder and colder. And remember our Lord said charity is going to grow cold in the world. People are going to start hating one another and treating one another like animals. And one reason you can tell how hospitals are dangerous, because my father, who was a doctor, he told me all doctors are afraid to go into the hospital because they know all the things that can happen when you go in there. You can go in there with an illness that's not even deadly and come out and be dead by the time you come out. For instance, when he was in the hospital once, my father, they had him in there, and they had him on these drips. They put him on the wrong drip, and his heart was going out because he needed potassium or something to get his heart the right way, and his heart was going out. And he was buzzing, no one's coming. Then he jumps up out of the bed and rips the thing out, and he's running down the hallway trying to get help, and the nurse is yelling at him, what are you doing, get back in. I mean, that's my father, who's a doctor. But he did tell me, he says, doctors are afraid to go into the hospital. Why is that? There's cold-hearted people, not everybody, there's good nurses and good doctors, but there's a lot of bad ones too. There's a lot of bad ones. And they just don't care about people. And they just can't wait, you know, they're sitting in there. And other things that happen too, like if you're a poor person and you're in a hospital and your Medicaid runs out, or your Medicare, they're not paying for you anymore, they'll kill you. Remember that one clip we had where they threw that one lady out in the street and she had her gown on and everything, and it was in the winter because they couldn't afford it anymore? Yeah. You're talking about, remember Jesus, God, Lord God, St. Paul said this, that charity will grow cold in these days, very cold. This is viciousness. This is evil. And now you wonder why people are afraid to go to doctors and hospitals. I'm not against doctors and hospitals. I think the doctor calling is one of the highest callings of a human being on the secular plane. And hospitals is a wonderful, beautiful thing. And I would wish we had good doctors and nurses that we can trust to go. There's a few of them out there. And so you got to search around, too, before you get the right one. It's a shame because a noble profession has been turned into a killing machine for conspirators to make a lot of money. I'm going to tell you something. It's the apostate Jews behind that. Because they're the very ones in your town would say, all Gentiles are goy cattle, and our job is to kill them if possible and not get caught. They'll give examples like, if I lock a man up in a room and I don't give him no food and water, that guy starves to death, but I didn't kill him. That's the Talmud of Jewish mentality. This is where this is all coming from. And the Freemasons have it too. Okay? And they want to make a lot of money. I have a lot of doctor friends too. They'll tell you that a lot of these Jewish doctors are butchers, animals. They'll go in there and while they're operating on one thing, first they don't even do the job the right way, they'll mess up another thing so they can go back and get more money purposely. How else do you explain it? Now, a lot of these foreigners that come over here, the Jews are the ones that are promulgating this. And the people are being infected by it. They're going along with it. And the money incentive is big. And they're getting infected with these same careless demons that don't care about people. And money is, like I said, a big motive. So if somebody is ran out of making their payments, There's so many operations they give you that you don't need because they're making money off of it. And my father also told me when he was in Hungary that the professor he knew had the cure for cancer and they killed him. They don't want the cure for cancer. They have it for the big elite guys that get it. They give them the medicines that they need, but think how much money is being made off of cancer. You know, and the Jews want the goy cattle to die anyway. But they got the treatments for themselves, though.